It's Friday afternoon. We've locked the door, but that doesn't matter because people still steal stuff from our office, and also because it's time for another edition of our weekly podcast, Tales from the Brown Desk. I'm Jake Rigney of Rigney Law, LLC. With me as usual is my law partner, wife, and the baby mama with the least drama, Cassie Rigney. The poor soul tasked with deciphering our obscenity-laced tirades is Terry Ulm. Friendly reminder, Tales from the Brown Desk is a free-flowing conversation involving two foul-mouthed attorneys. It may include graphic descriptions of sexual activity, violence, and conspiracy theories about the government listening to our publicly available podcast. It's like we don't even want listeners. Something, you know, like we're like, oh no, someone's listening in Virginia. That's terrible. It may not be suitable for children, the easily triggered, the hardly breathing, or people with a mouth full of soup. Ha, look at me, imagining that I might say something funny enough to cause a spit take. Yeah, right. Listener discretion is advised. Here's Terry.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Jake. How are you today?
I'm in a bad mood, Terry. How are you?
Oh, Jake. What's a spit take?
That's when you have something in your mouth and somebody says something funny and you spit everything in your mouth out because you can't suppress the laugh.
I see. I think there's probably been a couple of those instances that would have happened if I was drinking while we were doing these podcasts. But anyway, I'm good.
Yeah, we don't let you drink afternoon. All the drinking in this office comes in the morning.
Hi, Cassie. How are you?
Hi, Terry. I'm fine.
Good. So last week we concluded our series, walk.
Man.
Yeah, a walk.
It's over.
It is over. We went through 72 series. Not really 72, but.
How many was it? How many episodes was it?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to go back. But this year will be episode 21 of our podcast.
Right. Episode 20 hasn't aired yet.
Right.
But we're recording episode 21.
Yeah, we're on top of it. I'm on top of it here. So anyway, we finished our series, A Walk Through the Criminal Justice System in Indiana. And this week, we're going to talk about marijuana metabolites and the law surrounding it.
Okay.
But before we begin, we have a listener question.
Oh boy, I love listener questions.
I do too. So Chris from Chicago wants to know if it is legal or illegal to record encounters with the police. And these encounters would be, it's whether they're her encounters or she sees an encounter from afar.
Mm, yeah. In Indiana, and I think everywhere, but definitely in Indiana, it is legal to record both your interactions with the police and other interactions with the police that you can see if they're happening in public. Now, you don't have the right to take your camera and go into the police station and record what they're doing in the police station necessarily. But out in public, I believe you have a First Amendment right to record what they're doing, and you can record every bit of your interaction with them. And they're supposed to get in trouble if they prevent you from doing that. Now, there have been plenty of instances, I think, where they have. And in fact, sometimes the police just arrest the media when they're, when they're doing stuff like that. So the rules are one thing. How you enforce them sometimes is a different story. But it's not illegal to record them.
No, this comes back around, you know, having that fight on the street, you know, and as we've seen, you know, people, you know, where the stories where the media was arrested, you know, the person being under arrest, you're not going to win that fight with the police. And unfortunately, because they're the trained, you know, legal authority, you know, with the gun, you're probably going to get hurt if you try and have that fight on the street. You know, that's the kind of thing that you want to bring to court after the fact. That's the appropriate place to have that fight.
So my takeaway from there and from a lot of these podcasts is, like, you can fight the police, but you do it in court with a trained attorney that knows how to do that.
Yeah, I mean, look, most people haven't been in the Army, and most of the people who have don't want to go back. fighting dudes with guns or women with guns. I always say dudes with guns, and it sounds misogynistic, and I shouldn't say that. Fighting the trained people with the guns is just not a good idea. Running from them isn't a great idea either, although that must work sometimes.
It does.
You can tell that it works sometimes because people keep doing it. I think I probably mentioned that before. It's the same with shoplifting. You wonder why people still get caught shoplifting after all these years, and it's because some people get away with it. But yeah, look, nothing that's going to happen to you that night is worth taking a beating or potentially risking your life over, right? And that includes, when I say this, I'm including the ones where the police did something wrong and the ones where they didn't do anything wrong, because there are instances of both in this country happening. I'm not going to say every day, but quite probably every day. Somewhere in this country, the police are doing something wrong, and somewhere in this country, people are doing something wrong to the police. And both of those instances can end up with, you know, people being dead, and none of it is worth your life over. So absolutely, wait, fight it out in court later. That's what you got to do. It reminds me of a really funny thing one of my clients said to a police officer once while he was getting arrested, but I don't talk about my cases, so I can't tell you what he said. But but yeah, there is no sense in fighting it out with him. There is no sense in risking your life or your health over that sort of thing. There just isn't.
And frankly, you know, it kind of puts you in a bad light when you end up in court and they're telling the story. You know, even when you're in the right, the law does not allow you the legal authority to make those objections. Orderly society doesn't work if they did allow everybody to do that. So not only are you never going to win, but it kind of casts you in a bit of a negative light when you do end up in court.
But just to give you an idea of how difficult it is, or how the legislature makes this worse sometimes. They don't always make it better. Sometimes they make it worse. One example is not too long ago, it was 5 or 10 years ago, I think, they changed the self-defense statute, and they added to the Castle Doctrine. The Castle Doctrine is essentially a doctrine that says if you're in your house and someone's trying to come into your house, you can use deadly force to repel them. And so that way, you know, if you think the person's coming in to rape your daughter or kill your wife, you can kill them. You don't need to wait and find out what they're doing. You don't have to wait for them to get inside. You don't have to ask them about what their intentions are. You can just kill them. but they added some things to the Castle Doctrine and made it okay to use deadly force on the police if they're invading your house. As long as it's not appropriate. How you'd ever figure that out is beyond me, but some people will read that statute and say, well, that means now I can shoot the police if they're coming into my house.
This is an interesting topic because it brings us to the Breonna Taylor situation. And this is something, you know, that's a Kentucky law issue, but in the state of Indiana, you cannot assert self-defense if you're in the wrong. And it's my understanding in that case, you know, that the police were in the wrong place, even though it was under the guise of a search warrant. They were not in the place authorized by the search warrant. And it confuses me as to how the grand jury found they were justified in self-defense, because it's, at least in Indiana, when you're not on solid legal ground, you cannot assert self-defense.
And so the law, I actually saw this discussed kind of intelligently on the internet, believe it or not.
Wow.
Right. It was the only intelligent discussion happening anywhere on the internet that day, where there are these two different laws, certainly both passed by the legislature, that create these sort of conflicting issues, right? One is the Castle Doctrine. I can defend my house from invaders with deadly force. And the other is no-knock warrants. The police can get no-knock warrants where they don't have to knock, they don't have to announce, they can just show up, bust indoors, and arrest people. And they can come anytime they want, middle of the night if they want to. Now, if I don't have to wait till they get inside to shoot the people invading my house, then you've got this conflict, right? Where one person reasonably thinks he can defend himself because of the Castle Doctrine, and the police think that they're allowed to go in without announcing, without knocking, and just start knocking heads. And there are always going to be these kinds of issues as long as those two separate laws and those two separate doctrines exist. There will never be a time where we don't have the police trying to do no-knock warrants or people trying to defend themselves mistakenly believing that their house is being broken into. It's just, it's going to happen as long as they keep letting these sorts of things happen.
So do those two laws apply to Indiana?
Yes. Yeah, you can get a no-knock warrant in Indiana. You have to have reasonable, articulable grounds for it in addition to the warrant. It's not just that you can get a warrant. You have to have some reason to believe that that particular defendant will be, or that particular house will be defended with deadly force or is occupied by violent people who've said they're going to hurt the police or something like that, something to lead the judge to believe that it's necessary. But yes, that you can get a no-knock warrant in Indiana, and the Castle Doctrine exists in Indiana. So on a long enough timeline, you're going to see that in Indiana sometime too, where the police try to come with a no-knock warrant and somebody tries to defend themselves not knowing it's the police or...
Now, before we jump into the topic of the day, I wanted to talk about Indiana's recent record $10 million meth seizure. Yeah, so News Channel 13 reports that a record seizure of methamphetamine for Indiana happened by chance when a traveler found $10 million worth of the drug on the side of I-70 in Putnam County. The DEA says someone found six green and blue duffel bags in the grass and alerted police. And it's reported that the bags contain 225 pounds of meth.
Right.
Who's leaving? This kind of confuses me. I don't know. If you had the means to buy $10 million worth of meth, like, would that be a drop-off point to change? Like,
this sounds sincerely like it fell off the truck. I mean, it's the same as there was a time around Indianapolis that I think some Department of Public Works people found a tire that had like $60,000 or $80,000 in cash in it. Now, technically, they're working. And so, of course, they get it, not their employers. I mean, I thought good for them. But at the same time, I mean, sorry, could have picked up the money and split it, whatever. But that was obviously drug money. I mean, no, they don't. That's not a drop-off point. That's a mistake. Mistakes happen.
Now, in our last episode, we talked about how Indiana was on the cutting edge regarding sensible laws when it came to expungements.
Yeah.
However, Indiana's marijuana laws are among the harshest in the nation.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about one aspect of that law, and that has to do with marijuana metabolites.
Okay.
What are marijuana metabolites?
Marijuana metabolites are what ends up in your blood and urine and the other cells of your body, usually the fat cells of your body, after your liver processes the chemicals that you've ingested when you take marijuana. So if you smoke marijuana, it goes into your lungs, then into your bloodstream, then into your brain, and makes you feel however it makes you feel. Depends on the person. Some people get paranoid. Some people get super happy. Some people get hungry. And while it's doing that in your blood, it's also going through your liver, and your liver is turning it into less poisonous substances that your body can handle more easily and that are less likely to make you, you know, go to Taco Bell. So the trouble, and this is where the sort of common misconception about how long marijuana stays in your system comes from too. The trouble is that your body breaks those down into metabolites, and the metabolites stay in your system for quite a while. But that's what the metabolites are. It's the thing that your liver breaks THC down into.
Now, is it illegal in the state of Indiana to have those metabolites in your body? Let's say that Chad was visiting a neighboring state like Illinois, where recreational marijuana is legal, and he partaked, and then he came back to Indiana. Is he breaking any laws with having this in his system?
Just walking on the street, no. There's no kind of possession by consumption like there's potentially with alcohol. But it would be illegal if he got behind the wheel. You know, just to be a human walking around like that, no. But it is illegal to have metabolite in your system while you are operating a vehicle.
So let's say Chad lived in Illinois, has been smoking marijuana every day for the last 6 months, moves to Indiana.
Bad idea, Chad.
Moves to Indiana, hasn't partaken.
Unless he needs an expungement, and then it's a good idea. but if he's just been smoking a lot of weed, it's a bad idea, Chad.
Let's say then he moves to Indiana and he knows it's against the law here, so he's not partaking at all. and he gets behind a wheel.
I like the part where you imagine that a marijuana smoker in Illinois is like, well, I live in Indiana now. I guess I better stop smoking weed.
This is a little hypothetical here.
Right.
Say, like, well, he's a law-abiding citizen. Sure. It's legal there, so he's doing it. Mm-hmm. It's legal here, so he's not going to do it. But a week or two went by, and he hops in a car, and he's driving down the road. Is he breaking the law?
Probably. Yeah.
If it remains in his blood, in his system, yes.
Yeah, and it's anywhere in his body, not just in his blood. So the thing about marijuana is that it can be stored, the metabolites end up stored in your fat cells for a long time. If you are a regular smoker, it will stay in your system for not just a month. We're talking sometimes 2, 3, 4, maybe even 6 months if you smoke a lot every day. If you smoke it once and only once, it probably doesn't stay in your system for a month, although it depends on some other things too, like how much fat you have in your body and how much you work out, how much water you drink. But even then, it's probably going to stay in your system for between 10 days and 3 weeks. And if you are driving with metabolite anywhere in your body, including in your fat cells and in your urine, you're breaking the law in Indiana.
Wow.
Yeah. They made a law that just says if you drive with Schedule 1 metabolites in your system anywhere, it's a misdemeanor. It's in the DUI statute.
So you don't actually have to be intoxicated to be charged with operating while intoxicated.
Nope. And in fact, they don't even call it operating while intoxicated. They call it operating with a metabolite in your body. But it's in the OWI statute, and it's enhanceable if you have a prior OWI. So if you have a prior DUI, even if it's for alcohol or something else, within the previous 7 years, then operating with that metabolite in your body is a felony.
And yeah, it's one of those, I mean, they try to make a distinction because it's only a C misdemeanor, which is 0 to 60 days in jail. But you can get probation for up to 365 days on that. And that's kind of standard operating procedure. So it almost doesn't even matter whether you get charged with the endangerment, you know, like you're actually intoxicated driving in a way that endangers people, or the C misdemeanor, because it still comes along with you have to do substance abuse evaluation and treatment. You have to go to the impact panel. There's very likely to be a driver's license suspension involved. So even though it's a C misdemeanor versus an A misdemeanor, the effect in the end looks much more like the A.
So what kind of situation would Chad have to be in to not smoke weed that day, but still have to submit to some type of blood test? And
I think we've talked about before is that when you're operating in the state of Indiana with whether you're operating or hold a driver's license, you've already kind of agreed to the state to some things. One is the refusal statute. So if there's probable cause, if they think you're intoxicated, doesn't have to be alcohol, then the officer can ask for it when you could get it there. But also if you're involved in an accident with a serious bodily injury, all drivers are tested, period. It doesn't have to be your fault. All drivers are tested. And then in that case, you could be driving, somebody could do something crazy, and you just failed to avoid the accident. Even if you were acting as safely as someone could have in that situation, they'll take your blood. And if you've got metabolite in it, then you could get charged. And I've seen that done when they knew the accident was not caused by that person. I think it's really just an end around trying to get people who they couldn't catch smoking pot any other way.
Right.
This is what happens when you elect politicians who say they're going to be tough on drug crime. You know, they're like, I'm Bill O'Keefe and I'm going to be tough on crime. And you don't realize that what they're saying is they're going to make it illegal to drive a car if you've smoked weed in the last 2 months.
That's crazy.
Right. Because that's what tougher on crime means these days. We have plenty of laws. We send plenty of people to prison already, but nobody ever gets elected for saying they're going to be softer on crime. So people run on, I'm going to be tougher on crime, and then they got to do something. So they make these laws that people don't even really wouldn't normally expect or don't even know are illegal. And here's another weird thing about it, right? And I don't know if a police officer's actually figured this out or not, but if you're a police officer, you pull someone over and you see that they've been arrested for marijuana in the last month, You have probable cause.
Don't give them ideas.
Because they probably still have metabolite in their system.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now you have probable cause to draw their blood. Go get a warrant, draw their blood, arrest them.
So last year, the Marion County prosecutor stated that he will no longer prosecute simple marijuana possession cases. Uh-huh. So would having marijuana metabolite in your system in Marion County classify as a simple marijuana possession case? Or are prosecutors in Marion County charging people with this?
No, because he's talking about possession of marijuana. He's talking about having a joint in your pocket. There, that's different than getting behind a wheel. Because what people like to get, oh, I'm driving, I was high. It's a deadly weapon. And they take it very seriously. And they're not passing on OWIs for metabolite. That's not a possession is a different offense. And that's not what he was referring to when he made that statement.
Right. And the thing you have to remember about him is, and by the way, I know the Marion County prosecutor. We worked in the same office for a while. But one of the things you got to remember is that it's an elected position, mm-hmm. right? And if they start refusing to prosecute people who are behind the wheel with metabolite in their system, and then one of them goes out and kills someone, it's going to make really bad news. And he doesn't want really bad news like that. So it's highly unlikely that they would pass on a prosecution like that. I will say, though, the vast majority of people who commit this crime get away with it because the police don't have probable cause to search your body most of the time. If you have drugs in your car, then they might, especially if you have used marijuana like a joint or a roach or something in your car, they might have probable cause. But most of the time, when people get pulled over, they get a ticket or a warning and they get let go because the police don't have probable cause to do anything but that. And if they do, if they find it, they will.
Well, and what I've seen coming out of Marion County, obviously my sample size is small. If the possession is attached to other crimes, they're still adding it. It's got to be a true straight possession of marijuana. And you know, I was a drug prosecutor in Marion County for a long time, and the kind of thing is, we've got big problems. There's a lot of murder, there's big time drug dealers, there's meth dealers, you know, as you see about 26 pounds just on the side of the road. I mean, there's stuff going on out there. So it was kind of the thought process there was, I mean, if you're not bothering anybody and you want to smoke a joint, you know, have your Doritos, stay at home, you know. We're not going to bother you. Like, we got bigger fish to fry kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't smoke weed, but I do love Doritos. Is that weird?
No.
But I mean, that's where the thought process was. And now I was glad they took it to the public step, you know, after I left. But I mean, it was kind of, you know, why are we messing? They were getting diversions on this stuff anyway. Like, you're smoking weed, you're not bothering anybody. We've got bigger things to do.
So from my understanding of researching this prior to this episode was that most states in the United States don't have this law. They have a different approach.
You know more about that than we do, Terry.
What is that approach?
The approach is called the effect-based approach, by which prosecutors must prove that the drug impaired the driver's ability mm-hmm. to operate the motor vehicle.
Right. And that's similar to the way Indiana's laws work for alcohol DUI, right? It's not illegal to have two beers and drive your car as long as the two beers don't put you over 0.08 and you're not impaired. But that impairment element does not exist in the metabolite statute.
I would say probably because there's no marijuana lobby keeping that out there. You know what, the alcohol people were probably like, look, man, it's still legal to drink. You know, you got to prove something. You can have alcohol, but I'm not sure that there's a strong marijuana lobby to.
I mean, there is a marijuana lobby. They exist, but their focus right now is on legalization and medical. It's not on fixing other stupid laws very much. And so Indiana's got this law. It's, I guess I shouldn't call it stupid, but it's,
I think it's stupid.
It's, I think it's ill-advised. And, but they certainly don't have anybody like Coors or Budweiser, trying to talk the legislature out of it because there's nobody like that stands to make that much money in Indiana over a law like that.
So if our listeners out there, specifically the Indiana residents ones, that think this law is not a sound one, what can they do to help reform the law?
Look, you can, I mean, you can either, you can start a PAC or a super PAC, or you can call your legislators and talk to them about it. But that's really, I mean, that's really all you can do. It's the legislators that do it. And, you know, you can guess where that falls on the political spectrum, right? It's mostly going to be conservatives who don't really understand the dynamics of marijuana consumption, who fought CBD for so long before they finally made it legal, and who always stand up against legalization. They're the same people who are going to stand up that way. They're going to say, this is how we catch people who get stoned and drive. Never minding the fact that they catch many more people who aren't stoned and driving and make them criminals, which is a shame.
Right.
Well, and the thing is, you know, that you hear a lot of the negative, oh, well, then what are you going to do about DUI if you make it legal? Well, the thing is, you can get picked up on marijuana intoxication, OWI, as the current law is written. So, I mean, I think that's that argument against it is starting to go by the wayside because it's just not the reality of, you know, because you can get OWI for prescription drugs, you can get for marijuana. So the fact that it would be available recreationally doesn't, you know, that negative, the fear that, oh, you're just going to have a bunch of stoners all over the road now is just not realistic.
Right. The day they make it legal, everyone's just going to get high, get in the car and plow into your grandma is not that. I mean, that's not what's going to happen. Although I will say I visited Las Vegas recently and it's legal there, and it is everywhere. Like the strip has gotten almost like family unfriendly at this point by how much open air marijuana smoking is going on. Like I would not feel comfortable letting my daughter walk around the strip. They were used to market Vegas as it being kind of family friendly. It was a place for it's not.
Well, and I find that interesting because I've been to Amsterdam a few times, and what you describe is worse than any experience I've had actually in the red light district. You know, I think, you know, you have adults doing adult things in Amsterdam and you have children running wild with their newfound freedom.
That is sort of the classic argument for why it ought to be regulated, right? So that you can keep it more like Amsterdam and less like Las Vegas. But so far, especially in Indiana, you haven't seen any serious push in that direction. I mean, there are people talking about it, but I don't think that we're anywhere near getting any kind of legalization. They'll probably wait till the feds legalize. Even then, they might not. I mean, look, it's still legal to drink in some counties in Kentucky.
To drink in Kentucky?
Yeah, there are dry counties in Kentucky where you cannot purchase alcohol.
Don't move to Kentucky, people. So now we are going to cut to a short commercial break, and when we come back, we will bring you the latest Florida Man news.
Today's update on Florida Man is brought to you by Sonos Home Audio. We love our Sonos Home Audio equipment, and we miss it very much since it got stolen.
Seriously, someone stole the music speakers. Now my heart hurts, and I have nothing to soothe the pain except for whiskey and high-potency prescription opioids. This will surely end well.
Seriously, the new radicals used to say that the music was in me, but it's not. It's in my Sonos speakers and they are gone and I cannot process my feelings about this. I mean, I might even call the cops. That's how awesome my speakers are. This message not actually brought to you by Sonos, unless they send us new speakers for free, in which case this message was totally brought to you by Sonos.
Now, Florida Man, there's just a couple stories out of Florida this week.
Oh, good.
The first one's really odd. ABC News 2 in Florida reports that deputies are searching for Florida Man who stole cat blood. Yeah, Florida Man.
Okay. What's that good for?
I don't know.
Witchcraft, obviously.
Like voodoo, some sort of voodoo spell requiring cat blood. Where do you get cat blood?
From the veterinarian clinic.
Yeah, he broke in to steal cat blood.
Sorry, I wasn't really paying attention. I was still thinking about my Sonos speakers.
Yeah, this Florida man broke into a veterinarian clinic and was checking out this box, a blood box. And then he was seen on surveillance footage 20 minutes later putting the box into his truck. And the box contained 4 blood vials of cat blood that amounted to $600 loss for the clinic.
They didn't get any ketamine or any of the other, like...
The cat blood has a dollar value.
Yes. Four vials, $600.
So do they have, do they run cat blood drives somewhere that I'm not aware of?
When he was arrested, did they book him under the name Count Kitchula? Count Catchula? Is he a cat vampire?
He might be. I'm not sure.
Does he have a vampire cat?
He might. Didn't try to just, instead of that meow mix or something. Right. I don't know. Just,
next week, our Florida Man story will be brought to you by your...
Meow mix.
Your local black market cat blood dealer.
Now, NBC2 out of Florida reports that Florida man was arrested after trying to blame drugs on a homeless guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Florida man, he was arrested after he told deputies that a backpack containing drugs belonged to a homeless man that he had given a ride earlier in the day. He told the deputies that he dropped the homeless man off at the 7-Eleven and he knew he was homeless and a drug user. The deputies say they watched Florida man drive by the 7-Eleven earlier without letting anyone out of his car. Florida man was pulled over for an expired license plate, and the car he was driving was searched after the canine was alerted to the vehicle. Florida man described the homeless man as tall, slender man wearing a blue shirt and khaki shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Florida man was a tall, slender man wearing a blue shirt and khaki shorts.
He described himself yes. as the culprit?
Down to the color of the clothes that he had on.
It sounds like me most of the time when I go to the golf course, but I did not have a backpack full of drugs, ever.
Yep, deputies uncovered a large knife, a hatchet, a backpack containing pills and a scale, over 28 grams of meth, cocaine, and nearly 8 grams of fentanyl. That's all according to the arrest report.
I love the choice for the hatchet. That is a good, high-quality weapon of choice when you're a drug dealer with priors.
I'm sorry, if you got enough money to be holding that kind of weight, you're not homeless.
No.
I mean, you know, and even if you found it, I mean, that's your worldly possessions. You're not leaving them some rando's car.
No.
And this one of the basic rules of committing crimes, don't commit two crimes at once. Like, you know, it's, you know, driving around, you hear about the traffic stop for an out headlight and they find marijuana in your trunk. I mean, fix the headlight, you know, get your registration if you plan right. to commit crimes in this vehicle. They don't have a school, you know, criminal activity 101.
They should. We could teach it.
Hey, maybe we should make a new section to the podcast?
ITT Tech should teach like how to get away with crimes. That should be a major there.
Didn't they go out of business?
Criminal activity. You can get your degree in paralegal, criminal activity, clerk, medical professional, or automotive.
That's all the time we have for today.
Thanks, Terry. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Tales from the Brown Desk. Please remember, while we may discuss legal issues and provide information regarding the law to our listeners, we do not intend to create an attorney-client relationship with any listener. Our advice may not be applicable to some legal issues. Please consult with an attorney you've hired to review your legal situation before you attempt to apply the things we have said to your case. Tales from the Brown Desk is produced by Rigney Law and edited by Terry Ulm. If you want to ask a listener question, email Terry at terry@rigneylawindy.com and entitle your email podcast question. And we'll read it on our next podcast unless we start getting too many questions, but we never do because no one likes us. But if we did, we'd only read the good questions. Buzzsprout says we have 40 listeners now.
Come back.
It almost doubled in 2 weeks. Our numbers have me very confused. They go up and down more wildly than my mood swings, and I am bipolar. I have an update on last week's Ashburn, Virginia situation. Our podcast now has 5 downloads from Ashburn. This can only mean one thing. The government listener has escalated our monitoring up the chain of command so that the NSA and FBI can get involved. If you never hear from us again, we've likely been renditioned to a black site in Nicaragua. Our newest faraway listener is from, I believe it's West Palm Beach, Florida.
Florida picked us up.
It's a Florida man. Florida is on to us.
He is.
We are in trouble now.
Could he file a lawsuit for defamation?
No, because we have, well, he can file whatever he wants, but he would not likely succeed because we have not identified any person in particular.
Right.
It's always just Florida man.
What if his name is Chad and he's from Florida?
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, it's a good thing that I've got a disclaimer here at the end. The attorneys at Rigney Law do not comment on their current pending cases. Nothing we've said in this podcast is a comment on a case we're currently working on, even if your name is Chad, or if you're a Florida man who plans to steal our speakers while you're not wearing any pants. Thanks, everyone. Bye.